Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Jawanza. Great day to talk about business. We're going to be talking about entrepreneurship today. As you know, we do a regular monthly, actually a bi-weekly now, series with an author, a professor, a teacher, I mean, someone who's been in business for over 50 years. My special guest today, Professor Joseph T. Geiger, has started over 11 businesses. And taking all of that knowledge, all of that expertise, all of the years of experience, and combined it into a book called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, and the principles just keep growing. It's up to 105 now, isn't it, Professor?
Yes.
Business principles. I mean, this book is a must for anybody that is interested in becoming an entrepreneur, but not just if you're interested in becoming an entrepreneur, if you're already an entrepreneur and you're already out there in the waters. And, you know, if you're out there in the waters, you already know, you've learned that you definitely need a compass to navigate those waters that can sometimes be turbulent. So with that in mind, we've got a bi-weekly show specifically targeting entrepreneurs and would-be entrepreneurs to help you to be successful in business. You need a map. You need a guide. You need somebody that's been there to take you by the hand and to walk you through the process, because there are going to be a lot of things that come up, and you need to know how to deal with them. So let me tell you a little bit about my special guest today, in case you're tuning in for the first time. My special guest, again, is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, currently retired. Joseph Geiger grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver, and over his lifetime has started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. After his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management at J. Sargent Reynolds, located in Richmond, Virginia, where he currently resides. You know, Professor, as I was preparing for the show today, I was actually thinking about the fact that you had started over 10 businesses. And I just had a quick question for you. Was that your intent? I mean, once you started your very first business, after college graduation, was your intent to just continue to keep starting businesses, or was it just that business opportunities that were just too good to pass up just kept presenting themselves to you, and you just had to go for it?
Yeah, pretty much the latter. I started the business a while after I graduated, that lasted 21 years. And during that period, I think I started two others while that was going on. But I never set out to start businesses. And I didn't really even set out to find opportunities. They just kind of found me. And I would be trucking along, and something would come up, and I'd think, well, this is pretty good, and sometimes start a business to harvest the opportunity. So it was very much. I did not intend to start any of them. They just kind of happened, and tried to stay aware of the circumstances around me, and when one turned up, sometimes I'd say, "Yeah, let's have a go at it."
Well, while at the University of Denver, do you think that college prepared you for your future as an entrepreneur? I mean, were you taking classes in college that kind of geared you towards a life as an entrepreneur?
No, not really. At that time, I mean, you got to understand, I'm 80 years old. And at that time, the word entrepreneur, which is a French word, it may have been known in France, but I never heard it until I was probably, maybe 50 years ago when I was in my 30s, or even when I was in my 40s, before I ever heard the word entrepreneur. And it just was not used. So the classes, there was no small business management, start a business type program at University of Denver School of Business, which was a very major part of the University of Denver, and still is. They were very, very active in business education. But that word wasn't there. There was no teaching towards finding a business. None of that existed. It mm-hmm. all was really designed to go to work for a big company. So the courses that I took really prepared you to go to work for AT&T or IBM or something like that, General Motors, but not to start your own business. And it's only been in the very recent years when that has become available for young people who wanted to take advantage of it.
Any friends coming up that had parents that may have owned their own business that, you know, could have inspired you, you know, just in a way that sometimes we can be inspired by people and not even know that they are inspiring us. You know, if we come from, an upbringing where people around us, if not our own parents, but if, you know, peers or their parents were in business for themselves, maybe a subtle seed could be planted without us even being known that it's planted. Could that have been the case or not at all?
Well, yeah, I think that was the case in that the nature of a family farm is that is a business. And, and I had a lot of friends who were their parents were in business. I had a girlfriend whose parents was. My brother, his closest friends were, he had three of them who he was still close with. I had two or three friends, and one of them had their own business. So it wasn't unusual, and a lot of the family friends were people who had their own business. Today, if you're an income earner, the odds are something close to 40% that you will be an entrepreneur or start a business on your own sometime in your income producing lifetime. And that's a mathematical fact. The federal government has an ongoing study. They've had it for years and years and years, and it's the Bureau of Labor Statistics runs it, and they use IRS information. And what they say is that this figure is probably 5 years old. That over a third of all income earners will, at some point in their income earning capacity throughout their life, will be an entrepreneur. And I think your own family that is the case. And if you have a secondary education, so you've gone to a community college or a four-year college, that figure becomes almost 50%. If you're in the building trades, it is over 50%. So if you're you're an electrician, the odds are very high that you will start your own business. Now, it may be a sideline, but many of them grow into full-fledged businesses. So the people listening to us, I would suspect that something between 40 and 50% of them will have their own business or have a go at it sometime in their lifetime. So if you were to pick something to do for a career path, The most likely of all career paths is the entrepreneur path. And although it doesn't reveal itself as anything even close to that from education, that's in fact the facts of the situation for Americans and, frankly, almost worldwide, that small business is a very, very major contributor to family income.
You know, what's interesting too, Professor, is that out of that large number that you gave of people that will ultimately become entrepreneurs, another reality is that, and we'll be talking about it, is that a large number of those entrepreneurs, those businesses, fail within the first year. You know,
yes,
what I mean?
That's true.
So, you know, although, you know, there's a very large portion of people that, you know, hearing this show may become entrepreneurs, you want to stack the odds in your favor that you
right.
succeed. You know, a lot of people that are going to ultimately become entrepreneurs are going to be met with the reality is failure, because just according to the statistics, you know, according to the
yep.
numbers, they're that I'm just not doing it properly. So, and that's why this book was written, so that you can have a guide, again, so that you can have somebody that has climbed the mountain several times and can show you where the mines are, you know. So definitely please take heed, because, again, class is in session. Again, we're going to be talking about Professor Geiger's awesome book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top. It's up to 105 business principles now. We're going through the book chapter by chapter. Any thoughts on, before we get into it, Professor, on my last statement concerning the number of businesses, although there's going to be a large number of people that become entrepreneurs, that number is kind of, I don't want to say misleading, because it is what it is. The numbers, the facts are the facts, but a large number of businesses do fail within the first year.
Well, that's absolutely true, and the shame is that it doesn't need to be that way. They fail because they don't understand the fundamental requirements, and had they read my book or taken some courses from somebody who actually has done it, who has started a business and funded it and grew it, if they had done that, the odds of them failing are greatly reduced. They fail, generally speaking, because they don't plan, and they don't know how to plan, and it's a easily learned skill. None of us know how to do a whole lot of things that humans do, and if they bothered to try to learn the skills, there would be a much, much higher success ratio. So it's just too bad that they don't do that. And it's not just, you can't say, well, that's understandable with some plumber or some electrician that they don't know. Well, there's a whole lot of doctors and dentists who are highly skilled in their own field, and yet when they start their own businesses, they do not succeed. And sometimes they'll succeed for a while just because they have so much money coming at them from their full-time job that it just overwhelms the foolish mistakes they make. And, you know, nobody can say that an orthopedic surgeon or a dentist, and I know both who have failed, and they were both very, very smart men. They failed because they didn't do some very elementary things. And when you said to them, well, why didn't you do this? They looked at you like you were speaking Swahili, because it never occurred to them that you need to plan. And they didn't know how to plan. And it's simple. It's very, very simple. You could read my book, and when you got through, you would know how.
You know, Professor, you said something very interesting, and that is, you know, you brought into the discussion the highly skilled professions, such as, you know, a surgeon or a dentist starting their own business. I think many times when people think of entrepreneurs, they don't include those type of people, but it's true. A dentist can start his own business, you know. A surgeon can start their own business in that particular field. But I think people, when they think of entrepreneurs, they might think of, you know, somebody going out and starting, you know, maybe an auto mechanic or, you know, or something, you know, on that level. The dentist needs this book just as much as the auto mechanic, correct?
Absolutely. And the actually, the medical profession has the highest percentage of self-employed people, entrepreneurs, self-employed people. And the next highest percentage are the building trades. They're number two, and not too far behind dentists and all medical things. So the reason the medical people do it for a number of reasons, some of it is just for to protect themselves against lawsuits, so that they operate mm-hmm. under a corporate shield, and that's one of the reasons they do it. But very very often it's an awfully expensive way of doing it because they make so many foolish mistakes, and they mm-hmm. don't need to do that. And so one shouldn't say, well, you can't expect a plumber or an electrician to be able to do this stuff. And my reaction is, why? Of course you can expect them to do it. It's not that difficult. And so, you know, and the purpose of I wrote the book because in teaching I found that the textbooks that were out there were invariably written by people who had who had never started the business. In many cases, they'd never even worked for a business. In other words, they had worked their way through college up to and including a PhD, and the day after they got their PhD, they started teaching. And so they're teaching young people how to become entrepreneurs, and they don't have a clue. And the people who wrote the book is very much so. And when you read the chapters of the book, you say, well, this sounds good. How do you do it? And the answer is, beats me, because it beats the heck out of the person writing it. They had no idea how you actually do what they were telling to do. And that's the difference between my principles. My principles are executable. And in my view, if you have a business principle that's not executable, it's not worth knowing, because as a business person, you want to be able to do it. And if you can't do it, why know it?
Good point. Everybody, my special guest is Professor Joseph Geiger. We're going through his book, Principle by Principle, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top 105 Business Principles. We left off a couple of weeks ago on the principle number 17. We're in the section, chapter 3 of the business plan. That's the section that we're in right now. This is actually part 4 of the business plan section. So you can see that this section, a lot of attention and time is being devoted to it, because we cannot underscore or overstate the importance of the business plan. And so we're taking our time with it, and we're actually in part 4. We should finish this section of the business plan today, but again, with 4 parts, that lets you know that this is very, very important. We left off, the last principle we talked about was making a list and checking it twice. We'll be starting, that was principle 17. We'll be starting with principle 18 today, which is manage your project with a project manager. Manage your project with a project manager. Sounds simple enough, but, you know, if it's a principle in the book, then obviously there's something, it's not as simple. If it was that simple, everybody would do it, and obviously everybody doesn't. That's why it became a principle. Professor, can you talk about manage your project with a project manager?
Yeah, first we ought to define what a project manager is. A project manager is today, it's a computer program. Originally, it wasn't. It was all done by hand when I first started using them. It was done by hand, and it was very, very time-consuming to do, and I didn't use it very much until I got into a pretty sizable project that you just couldn't solve any other way. You couldn't keep track of it. And fortunately, by that time, there were some computer programs that made it pretty easy. Now they are, when I say pretty easy, the computer program took the drudgery out of it, and it did all of the recording of the information that you put down, and it did all the math, it did all the calculation, and it did it instantaneously, or essentially instantaneously. So a project manager is for projects that are complicated. And so in order to explain it, why don't I talk about building a building, a physical structure. There was a couple of years ago at J. Sargent Reynolds, they were involved in putting up a new sizable building, and so I could use that as an example. And so when you start a building, you have a certain sort of things that you have to do before you do the next job. And what a project manager is, it forces you to go through those things that need to be done in order of when they need to be done and who's going to do it, what it costs to do it, what the tools are or the contracts are, whichever the case may be. So if you're going to build a building, you need to have the trees cut down on the property before the concrete trucks show up to pour the foundation. And you also need to have it graded. You need to have the foundation dug. You need to have the slab, the formers all up before the truck shows up. Because if they're not, what happens to you is the truck full of concrete shows up. You're not ready for it, so they have to go dump it. And I can assure you that the concrete truck company is going to charge you for it. And they're also going to charge you for dumping it, because you just can't take a big truckload of concrete out and dump it on the ground, because you're going to destroy the use of that ground. So it gets pretty expensive, and you need to have it done. You need to have all the steel all set, ready for the concrete before it shows up. And that's what a project manager does. It forces you to go through the process of putting up this building step by step. And you show when things are going to be done, who's going to do them, how much is it going to cost, to make sure that the things that need to be done are done in a timely manner, and that you have the money to pay for it. Because when the concrete truck shows up, if you don't have the money to pay for it when it shows up, they're going to be real unhappy with you. And you're going to, before you're through, you're going to wish you had the money. So the time to find out when the money and how much it is before you start spending it. And that's what a project manager does. So it tells you what the job is, who's going to do it, how much is it going to cost, how much is it going to take, how many people you're going to need, and very specifically, do you need if you're going to cut the trees down, who's going to do it? Are you going to have chainsaws there when it comes time? Is there a truck there to haul off the big limbs and the tree trunk? So all of that you have to do before you start doing it. And so you start cutting down the trees, and you don't have any way to get rid of them. Well, pretty soon they get in your way, and the whole thing grinds to a halt, all because you didn't have equipment there to pick up the big trees and put them on a truck and get them out of there. And the same thing is true for the limbs. And so did you forget to have a shredder out there to chip up the limbs? And if you forget to do that, pretty soon you got a great big pile of limbs right in where you have to be. So it forces you to do this stuff. And when you get into a complex program or a complex project, it is very important that you had you have it all figured out. I started it when I was building yachts. And the yacht we had that we were building had about 1,500 parts. So if you were setting the engines, for example, and you didn't have the bolts to bolt the engine in place, Well, everything stopped. So the people who were following up without the bolts, they just sat there and did nothing. Well, what about the folks right behind them who were going to put bilge pumps and other stuff in? First, you had to have the engine. Then you had to have the bilge pumps. You had to have the engine shafts. And all of that stuff had to be there at the right time. And if it wasn't, everything stopped. So with some 1,500 parts and about 100 employees, it was to try to do it and keep it in your head was just this just wasn't possible. So I learned very quickly that I had to have a project manager and learned how to use it.
So the project manager is not a person, you know.
No.
I think a lot of times
it's a computer
program. A lot
program.
Of people hearing that would be. He would think it's a foreman or something, you know. No, the project manager isn't the site manager. You know, it's not the pro. It's
right.
Not a. It's a program. It's not. It's not an individual. Okay.
Yes, it's a program, and it takes all of this information out, and then organizes it in what is usually called the Gantt chart, and a Gantt chart is nothing more than a. What should I call it? It's a bar chart, and most bar charts, when you look at one, it looks like a bunch of bars sticking up in the up and down, and a Gantt chart, instead of being vertical, each portion of it instead of being vertical is horizontal, and you have critical paths, so critical things that have to be done. So, for example, with our building, a critical part very early on would be to remove all trees. And until that is done, nothing else is going to happen on the site. You can't get graders in until you remove the trees. And by removing the trees, we also have to include the tree trunks. So all that stuff has to be done, and that would be a critical path. As soon as that's done, well, then the next critical path would be to grade it. So you'd have to have the earth movers in to grade it to whatever levels it has to be. And until it's graded, nothing else is going to happen. So that's, again, a critical path. And so then the next thing would be is to dig the foundation. And until the foundation is dug, there's no sense in having concrete there. There's no sense in having any steel there or anything else because you don't need it until the foundation is dug and so on down the stream. So all of that, anybody, whenever you see a building going up, anything short of just a little simple work shed, there's probably a project manager behind it that is calculating all this stuff, and somebody who's in charge of entering all this information to make sure that it is done, and you don't get, the truck shows up to dump the concrete and the steel is not in the ground, so they can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So is the steel in the ground? All of it, not just part of it, but every single piece of it has to be in the ground,
mm-hmm.
ready to have the concrete dumped around it. And it has to be in exactly the right place. If you've ever watched a steel building go up, it's early on and they've just dumped the concrete, you see all these rods, these bolts sticking out of the ground. Well, those things have to be within a 16th or a 37th of an inch, every single one of them, in order to fit the holes so that the steel girders can be bolted into place. So it's very exacting. And a project
mm-hmm.
manager, which is again a computer program, as you rightly said, is absolutely critical. Otherwise, there's just no way it's going to be turned into a terrible mess. Your whole building project.
You know, the project manager reminds me somewhat of the cash flow forecast in its what's the word I'm looking for? Its effect, I guess, on
right.
You know, forcing you to actually look at things that you otherwise might not think about. Would you agree with that? I mean, from that standpoint.
Yeah, and it's things that you probably will think about the major ones, but the minor ones are equally as important. And there's so many moving parts in a building, or what I was doing when I was building the yachts. There were so many moving parts, and all of those parts had to be at the site at the right time with the right people to put them in, all on the exact time that they're needed. Otherwise, everything stops. And I can assure you, if you've got 100 people putting together a line of boats, and one of them stops because you forgot to get the drive shafts, well, that means rippling everything that's coming towards it also stops. So they stop making hulls, and the whole
mm-hmm.
thing just grinds to a terrible halt. The costs don't stop. Oh boy, the costs continue,
mm-hmm.
but everything else stops. So it is
well,
just
Professor,
critically important.
Can we talk for a moment just on that note before we move to the next principle, just about business relationships? Because when something like that happens, it could be an oversight, it could be the person in charge's oversight, or it could be someone underneath that person who neglected to do something or neglected to use a project manager, and then you've got all these people out ready to do their job but can't, because of, some oversight that has caused the whole project to, come to a screeching halt. That somebody's going to be very upset about that. They're going to be people that, okay, time is money, and they're going to be people sitting around wondering what person, who was responsible for this. And once a situation like that happens, they say you never get a second chance to make a first impression. Sometimes people are unforgiving when it comes to certain things, and it's important to your business relationships to make sure that everything is covered, all your bases are covered, your T's are crossed, your I's are dotted,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't ruin a business relationship because of some oversight that needn't happen in the first place.
Well, that's for sure. Because any major project, whether it's building a building or running a production line or delivering goods or whatever it is, it affects other people and other businesses. And as you rightly say, people are a little unforgiving. Well, they're more than a little unforgiving. They're a whole lot unforgiving because it affects them. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're running a ladies' ready-to-wear store, and the people who were supposed to deliver you dresses 2 weeks before the Christmas holiday begins, and here the 2 weeks pass, and people are coming in, and the dresses aren't there. So, and the manufacturer says, well, we're terribly sorry, something or other happens. Well, sorry shmari, let's be real, this hurts, because you can't recreate that. The customers come in, the products aren't there, so they leave, and it hurts you two ways. First, you didn't make that sale, and secondly, they likely will not come back. So it's it is just so terribly important, and very often a lot of that stuff is run by a project manager, whether it's building a yacht or a building, or it's if you're running You look at any of the bigger stores where they have lots and lots of products, and you don't even have to be a bigger store. You could be a small grocery store. Well, even a small grocery store is likely going to have 500 or 1,000 items, and they need to be there on time. And you can't tolerate having inventory build up that is dead, and you can't tolerate having building or inventory not show up. Now, all of this stuff has to be planned, and it's that sort of thing that kills startup businesses. They just don't understand the requirement for planning and how in depth it has to be. And if you do understand, it's not that hard to do, but you have to do it.
You know, Professor, our next principle is going to throw a lot of people, because when the things that we've discussed so far, for a lot of people listening, it may seem like a lot to do. You know, it might seem tedious. It might seem overwhelming. It's like, oh, my God, I got to think about this. I got to think about that. Well, yes, if you're the owner of the business, yes, because it's ultimately it's going to fall on you. So, yeah, you need to be aware of everything that's going on. Your next principle, Professor, is keep it simple. You know,
right.
And for a lot of people, be like, wow, this is a lot to keep simple. I mean, you got so much to do. How do you keep so much simple, Professor?
Well, the keeping it simple is an old principle. Actually, I was certainly not the inventor of that. One of the famous people who invented the phrase "keep it simple" was a Chinese general, Sun Tzu, and he wrote that in his book that was written some 2,500 years ago. It had to do with battles and the military. And basically, he said the simple works best, and that's absolutely true. So one of the things that happens in business, it seems very, very complex, and so what you're constantly trying to do is take the complex and make it as simple and understandable as you possibly can, and as easy to accomplish. It's real easy to let the complex overwhelm you. So again, what you try to do is how do we make this really simple? Well, the previous one of the project manager tends to simplify things, because once you've done it, you've got a record of it, and it's pretty simple to just replicate that and do it over and over again, and then all of a sudden it does get simple. But if you had to do it all in one day, you would say, oh my goodness, there's no way I could do this. And that's probably true. You probably can't do it. But by coming up with a simple way of doing things, and then making sure that you do that over and over again, so at that time, all you have to do is, let's take our example of the ladies' ready-to-wear store, and all you have to do is make sure that the inventories are up. Well, there was a time when you had to go out and count them all the time. Well, today, with scanners, it's real simple. As a matter of fact, they make scanners now that you don't even have to read each individual. You just walk down the aisle. And the silly thing, and I have no idea how they do it, but it gives you a readout of every item on the aisle and how many of them you have. And you can keep that up with does the cash register agree with what the physical inventory says. And so you try to keep all your plans as simple as you possibly can. Do not allow them to get complex, because they're going to get complex enough even if you work at having a very simple way of doing it. And a lot of business is success in business is keeping simple, make the complex simple, and then make sure that you do it.
It can be as simple as you want it, as need be, but if you don't do it, then
right.
It might as well be complex, right?
That's true. It certainly might. It might as well be, because if you don't keep up doing it, you got a very, very major problem.
Professor, let's back up to the manager project with the project managers for just for a quick second. I can hear somebody out there saying, well, how do I get this program? I mean, you know, because we talked about that your book is very executable. So for somebody who says, okay, I need to get a project manager program, how do I get one?
There's lots of them out there. And remember now that they're an electronic program. Just like WordPerfect is an electronic program, or Word is a computer program done by Microsoft. Well, Microsoft has a program that's part of that same family that has Word and Excel, and the project manager is called Manager. And it's a Word program. And the price keeps coming down. When I first saw it, it was a couple thousand dollars. And the last I saw, I think it's a couple hundred dollars. And it's not only cost one-tenth as much, but it's a lot easier to use. And that is a very good one. Now, it is, when I say it easier to use, you do have to learn it. And it's... because it is a big program and it breaks down, well, for example, you have a job and it's going to take people to do it. Well, first, how many people? So let's say it only takes one person to do it. Well, how long does it take them? It takes them 3 hours and 20 minutes. Well, will the program do the 3 hours and 20 minutes? If it's the Microsoft program, the answer is yes. There's another one I've used called Turbo Project, and it's a very simple program. It's easy to use, but if you deal with people, it gives you – you can break the how to dedicate people to a task in days only. So if it took 2 days and 3 hours, it won't do that. It'll say 2 days, but not the 3 hours. And it doesn't have any integrated way of saying what needs to be done. Does the person need to have a chainsaw to cut down the trees? And if so, how do you integrate that to make sure that when the laborer shows up, the lumberman shows up to cut down the trees, there is a chainsaw there? Is there a wood chipper there? Well, the Microsoft program takes that into consideration. When I was doing it for the yachts, I mean, we had, like I say, 1,500 items that we had to keep track of. So was the bilge pump there? And were the four screws that held the bilge pump in place there? And was the tubing to run the water overboard there, and the clamps and the through hull fittings, all of that had to be there. Now, it wasn't in the case of the Microsoft program. You had to put it in there, but once you put it in there, it was there. So every time you wanted a bilge pump, all you had to do was check whichever bilge pump it was, number 1, 2, 3, or 4, and poof, all that stuff was there. And then it ordered all that stuff, or it came up on the screen that how many of these items do we have in stock, and you kept a running total of that. Whenever you had new inventory coming in, you put it in, and it would know that send the somebody out to pick all this stuff, put it in a basket, so it showed up in the boat at the right time. And it also knew that, hey, we're getting low, so we've got to order another three bilge pumps for the next three boats coming down the line. So all of that stuff the Microsoft program does, and it does a great job. It is much easier to use. When I first started it, it was difficult to use, but they have made it much easier to use nowadays.
They kept it simple, huh?
They did. They really have simplified it. Just like, well, all you young people don't remember. You all think that we've always had word programs to type letters with and to write articles or whatever. But, boy, there was a time when you really had the first of the ones that came out were very difficult to use. And they were really designed for secretary pools, for somebody who spent 8 hours a day typing letters or writing stuff. Now, they learned how to do it. But if you thought you could go do that in your spare time, hey, think again, pal. But today, I mean, it's Word is really easy to learn. It didn't used to be that way, but it is today.
Everybody, we're going through the book principle by principle. This next one is one of my favorites. You got to have skin in the game. You need to have skin in the game. Professor, and for those who don't know what skin is, you got to have
money
in the game. Okay.
Right.
Some of your own money.
Your own money. And a lot of people think that if you're going to start a business, you're going to supply the brains and the work, and somebody else is going to supply the money. And in the big picture, that may be true. But I can pretty well assure you, if you think that somebody else is going to supply the money and you don't have to put something in it yourself, you best think again, because that's just not going to happen. People expect you to have skin in the game or money in the game, and the same is true of your major players. So if you and a friend start a business and you're looking for an investor, the investor is going to expect both you and the friend to have money involved. The best investor I ever knew, who never missed. I mean, whenever he put his money into something, it was a raving success. And one of his requirements was that the people who came to him with ideas, business ideas, need to not only have skin in the game, but he pretty well required that they had second mortgages on their house. They were really tied up in this thing. Now, he never missed. Every single one of them became very wealthy. And Saul used to say, if I invest in something, I expect to get a little richer, and I expect to make my young people who bring me these ideas very rich, and I expect to continue to get richer. And he always did, and they always did. But I saw some of them turn a little pale when he told them, now I'm going to invest in this, but you need to figure out, I want to see you have most of your own assets invested in this business. And if you don't want to do that, don't count me in. I'm out. And he didn't care how good a deal it was. And he said, if I did that, they were all worked hard, and there was none of this business that, well, when things got a little dicey and tough, they could step out of it and leave him holding the bag, because Saul had no interest in ended up holding any bags other than bags of money that he took to the bank. But that was his requirement.
That's some incentive. I mean, when you've got your own money in the game and you've got a substantial amount of your own money in the game, talking about second mortgages, you're not going to easily just, walk away from that. And I'm sure that when the people, the investees, the people that he invested in were carrying their own bags of money to the bank, they could appreciate the wisdom in his expectations.
I think they probably did. I mean, I learned a lot. He didn't invest in my business. The reason I knew him is because he had two loves. One love was building businesses from scratch, and the other love was airplanes. And he had an airplane that I'd sold him, and he kept it at my place, and he would come down because he didn't have a regular job. And he just liked to hang out. And he was fascinating to talk to, and I enjoyed it too. And he would, if I had a phone call come in or I had to deal with a customer, Saul would instantly disappear into the background. And he wasn't around. And then when that was over, poof, there he came back, because we got along very well. And I really, really enjoyed talking to him and learned a tremendous amount of what investors require and what made good deals. I read a bunch of one of the reasons that I learned about planning and writing business plans was I read a whole bunch that he had gotten. And I saw him take one that was, he said, "This is the best business plan I ever saw. And it looks like this is a home run hit." I said, "Well, great. When are you going to start it up?" And he said, "Well, I'm not, because the guy who gave it to me had somebody else write it. And when I talked to him, it was obvious he didn't know anything about it in detail." He said, "Hell, I knew more about it because I'd read it, and I'm not so sure he'd read it at all." And he also didn't have – he had a little of his money, but not very much. I mean, he had a few thousand dollars, but he had no interest in putting any more. He expected Saul to put it all in, and Saul said, "Count me out, pal. I'm not part of that noise." So he wouldn't do it, even though he said, "This is the best business plan I ever saw. And if it was run right, it's going to really make everybody a lot of money." But he wouldn't invest in it because, one, the guy had no skin in the game, and secondly, he had not written it himself. So he really didn't know what was there.
He should have found out who the guy was who wrote it and then found out what else he was into. He might have been a good person to invest in.
Well, he did, because the prospective entrepreneur told him when he tried, really pinned him down. And the guy who wrote it was somebody who had just gotten an MBA and or was in the final stages of getting an MBA. And so he wrote this for a guy and got paid for it. But, he wasn't interested in going in it himself. And Saul wouldn't go around him. I mean, if he said no, he wouldn't take it over, although he certainly could have. He would not. There's just no way. He was way too ethical to go to the guy who wrote it and say, "Hey, this is a terrific deal. Why don't you take it over and you put your own nickels and dimes in it, and I'll put the dollars in it." There's just no way he would do that.
Everybody, lesson learned though. Don't think that you're going to. What's the word I'm looking for? Deceive the potential investor, because you don't know what they know. You don't necessarily know what they know, not only what they know, who they know. It's best to just write the business plan yourself. That way you know that you know your business, and then hopefully things will work out for you. But downside to having somebody else do it is that, you talk to somebody and they know that somebody else did it, not to mention the fact that you don't even know your own business. And then, of course, how can you be running it?
Right. Well, that's absolutely the case. And in this particular instance, all that jerk had to do was to sit down with the guy who wrote it and spend probably 6 or 8 hours going through it page by page. Why did you put this in? Why did you say it the way you did? Why is that important? And had he done that, he would have known why things are where they are. And that is critically important. And good investors understand that and are able to track it themselves. And so, and they will pick up on it very, very quickly, where the young entrepreneur, it takes him longer to do it, but he or she should really learn it. And if they do that, they'll succeed. But you got to know, not only do you have to have a good business plan, but you have to know the why for everything in the Bloomin' business plan. Why is it where it is? Why is it done this way? And if you can't answer those questions, good investors won't have to give you the time of day.
You know, I just want to slip in here you made a point. Need to clarify a point, and the point that you made was that it would have been unethical for Saul to get with the guy, book the business plan, and to get with him, and then take the ideal and steal it. I just want to make it clear that I wasn't suggesting that he do that. What I was thinking was that he could have gotten a highly competent business partner. Because he said it was the best business plan that he had ever seen written. I wasn't implying that he, somehow take the business and, just get the other dude out of the business, but that he could, since this guy was obviously had such talent that was evident from the writing of the business plan, that maybe he and Saul, could have done something, but not necessarily in that business.
There's a real famous one, eBay. Was originally brought to some venture capitalists, and the guy who brought it to them didn't have hardly any experience in running a big company, and they wanted some serious money to get this thing really going. And he had it going, but in a very, very small way. And so they told him he needed to go find somebody who was a good business person, and he had the wit to say, who? Give me a name. And they did, and I just slipped my mind now. It was a lady, and she ran it for a long time and is now very wealthy. She's in California. And they said, if you can find somebody like, and they gave him her name, or somebody like her, we'll finance this thing. But we aren't going to finance it with you because, quite frankly, sir, you don't know what you're doing. You couldn't handle it.
Mm.
We need somebody who can handle it. And he did that, and now both of them are rich as hell.
Oh. Wow. I love stories like this, man. This is inspiring. And for all of the listeners out there, the entrepreneurs and would-be entrepreneurs out there, I know that you're enjoying this too. But I want to tell you all how you can get the book, or I'll let Professor Geiger tell you how to get the book. We still have one more principle in the business plan section. We'll pick that up next time because there's not enough time left in this show to cover it. It's very important. Everything costs more and takes longer. You've heard Professor mention that. Is that a fact, Professor?
Oh, boy. Is it ever. So you can get the book two ways. You can get it at through Amazon. And if you do, just type in Go to Books and then type in Entrepreneurial Success, 105 Business Principles, and that'll take you right to it. There's quite a number of Entrepreneurial Success books. But if you put in the 105 business principles, it'll take you right to it. Or you can get it from me, and the only difference is it costs the same, but I sign all of the ones that I sell, and they come from me. And it's theroadtothetop.com. And if you type in theroadtothetop.com, you go right to my website.
And you can get the cash flow forecast there as well, correct?
Right. You can get that, and you can get another little book I have for young people trying to figure out what kind of a career they want, finding a career for life, and that's there also. But entrepreneurial success definitely is.
Well, don't let Professor's words fool you. He said another little book. That book, I mean, it might be little in stature, I mean, in amount of pages, but it's big. and the information that is packed into those pages. So, Professor, real quick, can you just tell them why you wrote that book?
Well, I wrote it because I had so many students who came in and that they said, well, I found some that had master's degrees. I had one that had a master's degree in psychology and couldn't find a job. And I told her that I could have told you that before you started, 6 years ago. If you'd asked me that you have a passion for psychology, and I want to get a bachelor's and then maybe even a master's, and that'll get me a good job, I would have told you that if you want to do it, fine. God bless you and go for it. But don't expect a good job there because there aren't any. And it costs you the same to get a bachelor's degree in social studies or in psychology as it does to get a bachelor's degree in petroleum engineering. Both of them will cost exactly the same amount of money. The difference is that the social studies and the psychology, if you get a job when you get through for $35,000, you've done pretty well. And if you don't have a job as a petroleum engineer that'll pay $175,000 by mid-career, you didn't do well at all, because that's the average. So you can spend your $50,000 getting your education in one and have a $35,000 a year job, or in the other and have a $175,000 a year job. Costs the same.
Everybody, you see, in those few pages, there's a lot of information on a lot of different careers, so you definitely want to get that too when you're getting Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. We're going to start up next week, I'm sorry, next show, which is in 2 weeks, with Everything Costs More and Longer, and then we'll be moving into Chapter 4, and that is How Entrepreneurs View Financial Statements. Very, very important chapter. Again, How Entrepreneurs View Financial Statements. You're going to need to view financial statements. So we're going to be getting into that next show. Professor, as always, thank you so much. Great show, great information. Parting words for our listeners at all today?
No, thank you. Looking forward to talking to you in 2 weeks. And hope those of you who want to start a business, buy my book, you'll find that it's going to be very, very helpful.
And everybody, make sure you go through the archives. These shows are archived. And if you tuned into this show today, this was, again, part 4 of the business plan section. Part 1, part 2, part 3, and all of the preceding chapters are in the archives with Professor Geiger. So go, by all means, get the book, okay, because that way you can read ahead, all right? Thank you so much, Professor. I'll be in touch with you.
Good enough. See you in a couple of weeks. Bye for now.
All right. Take care. Everybody, that is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. He's author of the book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. It's a must. It's not one of those things where, I mean, sure, everything is an option, but, I mean, if you're serious, I mean, if you're really serious about being successful entrepreneur and you do not choose to be one of the statistics that fail within the first, then stack the odds in your favor. Get the book. You need a compass. You need a guide. And what better guide? Somebody that's been doing it for over 50 years, longer than many of you listening have been born and been doing it successfully. Has started over 11 businesses. Has written a book full of principles, not just for business, but for business and life. So if I were you, then, and that is my recommendation, and I don't just recommend books, I don't endorse on a regular basis things unless I really believe it. I've actually have read it several times, and it's awesome. I mean, that's all I can say. The principles are very, very easy to read and understand, but again, if you're serious, then stack the odds in your favor and get the book. My name is Juwanza. Thank you, everybody, for your time. I truly appreciate it. I don't take you for granted. You could be doing anything, but you've decided to take time and spend it with us today. So, again, I thank you, and to all of the entrepreneurs out there, again, much success. I don't like to use the word luck. Much success to you. And you can always buy this book for somebody else. If you're not an entrepreneur, you can actually get the book for somebody who you know is considering going into business or may already be in business. There's very important information in there that they'll be able to use, okay? So until the next time, everybody, again, my name is Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? Peace.